This is Teachers Talk Radio, and you are listening live. Tune in live at ttradio.org or to join in the conversation, download the Podbean app and search Teachers Talk Radio. Follow the hashtag TTRadio. Tune in, talk it out with Teachers Talk Radio.
And good afternoon to you all. This is the Drive Home Show with myself, Neil Mullen. Hope everyone is having a good summer holidays and a relaxing one. And thank you for joining me this week. This week, it's going to be a solo show today. So no guests this week, unfortunately. But I'm posing a big question this week, and I'd love to hear people's thoughts. So please do text in your thoughts on this question. And it's a big one. This show is going to entirely focus on what does inclusion look like for many of us in the teaching profession. That would look different, and we'll have different views on that. So basically how the show is going to run is I'll kind of give you my thoughts on inclusion and what it looks like to me from my background and my perspective. Then hopefully you guys will jump in and text in some of your thoughts, and we can have a few discussions on that, and get to see different people's perspectives from different phases of education, from different backgrounds and different places from around the country. So that's going to be this week's show, really. So inclusion, it's a word that is often widely used within education, and widely used within even teacher training practice. It's, we have to be inclusive practitioners and inclusive professionals, which we all are. But the question that I've posed this week is, well, what does that look like? And what does inclusion actually look like to the class teacher, to support staff, to the learner themselves, to that school leadership team? What does it look like to parents, the carers of those children? What does inclusion look to that community in which the school sits? So in this first part of the show, I'm going to share you kind of what my thoughts are on that, and what I personally think inclusion looks like to me, and some of my experiences of the various roles that I've done. Then hopefully in the second half of the show, we'll get a few of you guys texting in with your thoughts on what that looks like. So for those of you that are just tuning in this week or have yet to catch up on any of my other shows, my name's Neil, and I'm a teacher of SEND adults. Have worked with SEND learners pretty much all my career, and have worked both in mainstream education and within in specialist education. I've done that across the different phases. So I've done primary school, secondary school, colleges, and now do adult learning. So I feel I've got quite a few different experiences I can share with you guys today. So for me, inclusion, what does it look like? So for me, inclusion tends to look slightly differently from a mainstream perspective to a specialist perspective. I've worked in both, and I feel that there is enough of a difference between how the two look. For me, inclusion in a mainstream setting is how, for me, just purely working with the SEND learners within that mainstream environment, it is being almost inclusive and kind of going above and beyond to be seen to be inclusive. So that can be, it can almost look like a mainstream environment is being inclusive by, you know, providing extra support for a SEND learner within a classroom, you know, having that SEND learner in a mainstream classroom, accessing the national curriculum. It can be seen in an inclusive policy, you know, whether that be, you know, recruitment or actually just an inclusive practice of teachers in prospectuses to parents. It can be things within year groups and year teams where they you know, share inclusivity. Excuse my mispronunciation there. So for me, when I've worked in mainstream settings, that's kind of been the vibe. It's kind of been actually everyone is still inclusive, but it's almost selling that inclusivity and kind of really, you know, highlighting those particular, you know, moments of inclusivity where, you know, that's really good inclusive practice. That's, you know, let's celebrate that success. And this is just my own personal perspective on it, that almost kind of, although the places that I have worked in are inclusive and were inclusive, it almost felt a little bit, I want to say the word fake, which is a little bit controversial, but it almost did feel, oh, that's inclusive practice. Let's highlight it. Let's show everyone that we're inclusive. Now, from my own experiences working in special schools, it doesn't look like that. It really doesn't. It's more of a just a general feeling, and more of a general atmosphere of inclusion within specialist environments. It doesn't really need to be promoted. It doesn't really need to be highlighted, because actually all that we are doing is you know, we are being inclusive professionals, but actually within that specialist community, there is inclusion, because all the learners there have particular needs. All the staff that are in that specialist environment are wanting to work with those specific type of learners. So actually, merely by being the establishment that they are, is kind of being an inclusive one. So that kind of looks to me, from the establishments that I've been in, is where those specialist environments are so good is that it almost becomes that, yes, you would have your own classroom, yes, you would have your own teacher support staff, but actually you would have a more wider inclusive environment where, you know, spaces are shared in terms of, you know, accessing, you know, specialist rooms or equipment. You would have classes meeting up with one another to share particular sessions. So that might be music therapy. It might be access and rebound therapy. You would also have you know, lunchtime clubs and after school clubs that were inclusive. So we would have, just thinking back to one school that I worked in, where they had a sign-in choir. So that was inclusive in terms of anyone could join, whether they had, you know, sign-in experience or not. They could still join in, learn the basic signs to the songs that they were going to learn, and it kind of was a broad and an inclusive environment. Going back to the mainstream side of things, where we said that it was highlighted within policy and within you know, highlighted within certain year groups, again, that was highlighted in policies when I've joined specialist establishment. It has been, you know, he's our inclusive policy. But it almost didn't need to be shared with myself. It was kind of almost obvious in terms of actually just being in the school environment and being in that area with those staff, with those learners, that actually this is a really good inclusive environment, and you know everyone's working together to include everyone in whatever they want to do, without actually having that almost unnecessary thing of, you know, identifying it, highlighting it, you know, sharing it. Actually, it's just this is the inclusive environment, and this is what we work in every day. So for me, that's kind of how I base or what I think inclusion looks like within a setting. But it can vary between settings. So where I'm currently at now is I currently work at a community venue, with learners coming to a specific community learning venue to do their learning. Now that is very different to a school environment. Our inclusive environment tends to be just our group now, because we don't have that wider school environment. We do have access to wider community in terms of the community building that we're in, and yes, everyone is valued and is included, but it's not the same as that school environment where there'd be access to a wider inclusion group. So for me at the minute, my kind of what it looks like is slightly altered, because I'm not in a school environment, therefore I'm not seeing that broader inclusion, you know, between classes, between staff members, between learners interacting on at break and lunchtime. So I'm not really seeing that. I'm just seeing my own little group of learners as that's my inclusion, and how can we include everyone and celebrate everyone within our little classroom environment. So it's changed a little for me. I'd love to know people's thoughts on it, so please do text in. I know we've had a couple of messages so far, which we'll get to a little bit later on. So yeah, that's kind of what it looks like. But when researching about new things and when seeing new articles on inclusion and inclusive policy and practice, it kind of has challenged me what that inclusion looks like. So for me, I've explained what my ideal and what I feel about inclusive practice. But actually, within that inclusive practice, are we ever 100% inclusive? And reading inclusive policy articles and inclusive practical strategies and research, is that is a very hard thing to do, to be 100% inclusive all the time, because even within that inclusive environment that I've experienced, that what I base my inclusive look upon of a specialist in establishment, even within that, it's still not 100% inclusive, because actually there is you know, specific need classes in terms of learners that have profound multiple learning disabilities will predominantly be in a class of similar learners. So therefore it becomes a question of are those learners being included, or is there inclusion there, because actually they're not interacting with the wider population. They tend to be with learners with similar needs, and that is understandable due to, you know, accessing similar sort of sessions, curriculum, that type of thing, which is understandable. But actually, from an inclusive point of view, are we actually giving them the best experience at school by not allowing them to be with, you know, potentially age-related peers who don't have a diagnosis of profound multiple learning disabilities. Similarly, with learners who are diagnosed on the autistic spectrum, they can often be, you know, put in the same group, same classes as other learners who have been diagnosed on the autistic spectrum. So again, is that being inclusive? You know, again, we can see the rationale of why, because actually, you know, potentially those learners may have similar needs, similar things that they may need to access in terms of their, you know, accessing curriculum, accessing specific support. But is that establishment actually being 100% inclusive because they're grouping the similar needs together and not exposing those learners to potentially different arguments in terms of different, you know, different classroom environments where they would have different needs and different learners. Again, you could go further from the research and articles that I've read. As a staff team, as staff, are we ever 100% inclusive? Because that's an ideal that probably what we all strive for, but are we ever actually going to be 100% inclusive all the time? Within mainstream environments, that becomes, you know, quite hard. There's lots of learners all in one, you know, for a specific time. There's probably only one teacher, potentially you're a teaching assistant, depending on the needs of the learners. So that is very hard to be 100% inclusive of everyone within that room for that whole hour. That's almost never going to happen, because at different points and at different parts of that lesson, someone will feel not included for whatever reason. Maybe that be that they're just not understanding a specific topic and they need a little bit of help, but the help is needed somewhere else. Whether that be actually a group is discussing something together that person doesn't really understand and kind of doesn't want to join in that discussion, or may actually be that they are just wanting to get on with their work and want to kind of seclude themselves away from that wider group. So mainstream it's hard, but also within specialist establishment becomes quite hard as well, because not only within your own classroom environment, because there is different pressures, there's different needs on staff in terms of who they might support. So for example, in the establishments that I've worked at, you know, staff have been assigned a specific learner because they work really well with that learner and almost become like a one-to-one support, or they may have a couple of learners or a group of learners that they work with all the time. So then we're not really being inclusive for the staff, because they're only accessing, you know, two, maybe three learners at a time, and they get used to that and that becomes the norm. So then their practice is not really development and becoming wider inclusive, because they don't get the access to the other learners, which they may learn, you know, about their needs and about how to engage them and include them in different activities a little bit more. But also within a wider population. So for those staff that are working with more complex and more difficult needs, they will naturally tend to spend more time in their classroom, because, you know, those learners will probably not go to the lunch hall, will probably not, you know, access playgrounds and outdoor spaces in the winter time because of needs. So actually they're not really being included in the wider school community, because they have to be with those learners who are in the classroom. And it's kind of, are we ever 100% inclusive? And for me, and from what I've read and my own experiences, I don't think anyone can be. I don't think it's possible. No matter what, you know, what phase of education you work in, what type of learners you work in, you know, what geographic area of the country that you work in. I don't think it's ever possible to be 100% inclusive. I think at times learners are going to slip through that net and not feel included or not feel part of that particular activity, part of that particular session, for whatever reason. I think at times staff members can often feel not included with you know potentially being wrapped up with their own class learners, you know, particularly, you know, being a bit isolated depending on the learner's needs, you know, not being able to go and share social time with other peers. It can also be about the school's broader inclusive philosophy. Some schools I've worked in and some establishments that I've worked in have been really good at sharing their vision of how people are included within their school and how inclusive practices shared and how shared working and actually trying to meet the needs of learners as much of the time. Some places I've worked in have communicated that really well by either, you know, talking me through an inclusive policy and giving me examples, allowing myself to go into other classrooms and to other, you know, and see how other staff are doing inclusive practice. Actually just, you know, allowing me to come in and almost look around the school before I joined and get a little bit of a feel for it, because that can be a real indicator of whether a school is a good inclusive school or not, really, by going there and just getting that feeling for the place and that really helps with those places. There's some establishments that I've worked in that actually hasn't got that sharing of what inclusion looks like in their organisation well at all, and that's mainly being done by here's our inclusive policy, you can read it, and that kind of doesn't help, you know, myself as a teacher or support staff coming into that organisation to actually get to grips with what that inclusion looks like. And often in those establishments that I've worked in, when that's happened and I've been given an inclusive policy to look at and to read, I've often found that their inclusion, you know, inclusive policy reads really well, but then in practice it kind of falls down in terms of there's not that shared vision and there's not that shared inclusiveness, you know, and that can be seen with almost class teams and learners being almost feeling isolated and slightly cut adrift, possibly due to their needs or possibly because of the learners that they work with. Sometimes it can also be down to almost an environment that people can work in. So I feel like I've been quite lucky in terms of the environments that I've worked in has been, you know, really inclusive most of the time. One or two where that practice hasn't gone so good, but still being evident. But it would be really interesting to hear people's thoughts of actually, is there any times in schools where that inclusivity has almost become, you know, seclusion really, and actually you as a teacher or you as a staff member have thought, actually I don't feel included here with my set of learners, or I don't feel that the leadership team are really being inclusive. You know, I feel kind of cut adrift from that. And I suppose from my own personal experiences, I've never really felt like that. But it'd be interesting to see that actually, has that actually been the case for people? How, you know, have you worked in a school or a sixth form or a college or adult learning, wherever you've worked, have you ever worked in somewhere that you've actually felt, no, this isn't really inclusive. This is not inclusive practice. I don't feel included in either, you know, being consulted on things like curriculum, being briefed about changes within that organization, you know, being heard as a staff member. I've talked to quite a lot from the learner's perspective about being included, and I think with reference to myself, you know, send learners, you know, depending on their need, it's kind of hard to quantify what being included is and what, you know, inclusive practice would mean to them. But in the main, majority of send learners that I've worked with have felt, you know, safe, they've felt included within their class and within the wider school, and have enjoyed their school experience. But I don't think we've really focused on staff, so support staff, teaching assistants, teachers, you know, even probably, you know, middle leaders or assistant leaders or even head teachers. Does where you work actually promote inclusion? Do you feel included where you work? Have you read the inclusion policy? Has it actually been changed in a while? You know, that would be interesting to revisit some of the inclusion policies from establishments that I've worked at, because probably not a lot of them would have changed, because, you know, why would it need to? It says everything that we're doing, but actually does it change over time? Does it, you know, does actually the term inclusion mean more to us now than it did, say, 10 years ago? You know, I'd be interested to hear to read your thoughts. So please do text in. That's kind of my thoughts on it. I've kind of read a little bit more about inclusion in terms of policy and practice through my master's degree. And it really is quite interesting to look historically at inclusion, and that's kind of why I posed that question of, you know, does inclusion mean more now than it did, say, 10 years ago? Because actually inclusion within education has been quite talked about over the last 20 years, really. But it's been more heavily emphasized within the last, say, 5 to 10, in terms of posing that question to establishments of are you an inclusive organization, which naturally everyone would hope to strive to be, yes. Then how are you demonstrating that in terms of, is it your inclusive teaching practice? You know, are your teachers demonstrating that? You know, and that's being put into lesson observations, and that's, you know, historically that kind of wasn't a historical thing within teaching observations. It was kind of mentioned, but it wasn't, you know, as heavily looked for or as heavily identified within teaching observations. In terms of historical inclusion, it tended to be that actually organizations were judged on their inclusive practice by, you know, their inclusion policy and kind of how that was written and what was in there. But since looking at a lot more research and a lot more a lot more practices as well in terms of inclusive practices. It's now a lot more focused on for inclusive organisations, but also parents, carers, local authorities, and Ofsted. It's more looking at, you know, can they see examples of that inclusive practice? Can they see, you know, what is stated in your policy within the school? So they might find that within the lesson. They might find that within when they are looking at unstructured times, you know, breaks, lunches, after school clubs. So the term inclusion hasn't really changed that much, but the emphasis on it for schools has, in terms of the policy and but putting it into practice. There's a lot more focus on actually seeing inclusive practice, whereas a few years ago it tended to be, we were just, you know, oh, that's an inclusive organisation because their inclusion policies, you know, reads really well, and didn't necessarily have to look for what was written in there within the school. Now it tends to be a lot more like that. Specifically for me, within my remit, within teaching 416 and adult learners, specifically within a community context, that is a real emphasis within whether I was going to be observed or whether, you know, my local authority was going to be Ofsted, and within my performance management, I need to demonstrate that I'm an inclusive practitioner, and fit in with those values that happen to be within the service that I work for. I've got to show that. So I've kind of said what my ideal is about what inclusion looks like a little bit earlier. So what does that look like in practice to me? So it being an inclusive practitioner, obviously for SEND learners is slightly different to mainstream. You know, mainstream, you've got 30 plus kids in a classroom for about an hour a day, and that constantly changes. My learners are with me 3 days a week, all day, and I have the same learners. So I get to know those learners quite well. And I get the opportunity to work with those learners more than a mainstream teacher would. So therefore, I get to know them as individuals possibly a little bit better, but I also get to know how a class dynamic works a lot more. And that kind of changes throughout the year, as does a mainstream setting, as you know, settle into the year and things like that. But really within my group of learners, you know, I've got a maximum of 8, I really get to see how that dynamic change and how I change my practice. So in the beginning, as at the start of every year, you're getting to know learners, you're getting to find out their levels, you're getting to find out, you know, their strengths, their things they need to work on, potential barriers to learning. Similar to mainstream. But then from there, kind of my inclusive practice kicks into gear. It's about finding out for my SEND learners mainly what their barriers to learning are, because a lot of the time when they come to my course, they've come to my course because they haven't really felt included in a mainstream, you know, school, or they've gone to a college where they've been on a foundation course, and for some of my learners who do have needs but have a lot more ability than what other people have perceived them to have, they've felt a lot of exclusion in terms of, you know, they've been on that foundation course, they've just been given some work not really tailored to them, and they've kind of felt excluded. And what we have to do, and what we, myself as a practitioner, I have to do is I have to work really, really hard to get that buy-in from the learner, to get them to actually, you know, feel included and feel like, you know, we're working with those as individuals. We do feel like the more students that we're getting in from a college setting, not necessarily straight from a school setting, tends to be their biggest need at the minute. We've got a text in at the minute as well, and 100% agree with this statement. Exclusion drives students away, which is exactly that. Now, COVID-19 has probably highlighted this problem, but also given us a little bit more, not cause for concern, but probably a little bit more of a wake up call in terms of actually the pandemic caused pretty much a standstill to education. And for a lot of my learners, SEND learners, it was the end of their foundation course. So they didn't actually get to complete their course. It was just stopped in March, and that was kind of it. And because it was a totally new thing, a totally new pandemic, that actually some organisations and sub-establishments weren't great at keeping that inclusive practice going. And students did feel excluded because they were kind of almost left in terms of, we were told to lock down in March, and it's got to May, June. You were going to leave in July anyway, so yeah, you don't have to do any work. That can be a major effect on any learner, but especially a SEND learner who has those additional learner needs where they need a little bit more support and almost feel like they need to be included. So if then they're suddenly being told, you don't need to really engage with us, you know, our course is going to finish anyway, we're not going to do really remote learning for you, that can be really hard then trying to restart their learning and restarting their education. So from the pandemic, it's kind of highlighted that problem of actually, even in these strange times of remote learning, have we been 100% inclusive? Probably not. Probably those inclusive practices that we had in organisations and face-to-face learning has probably dropped down a couple of notches in terms of remote learning. And actually, that hasn't really helped the situation. It's probably, you know, given it a little bit more, you know, validation to exclusion, really, rather than inclusion. I'm conscious that we're getting, you know, near towards the end of our first 45 minutes together. So I'm kind of going to lead into the next half of the show after the news and adverts of, actually, the COVID-19 pandemic has obviously hit, you know, exclusion has kind of come from that. But the pandemic highlighted an even more bigger problem in terms of, you know, we locked down, we did remote learning, but it highlighted a real thing for me in terms of inclusive practice. Now, we as teachers are really good at being inclusive practitioners. We can gather a room full of learners. We can make sure that the vast majority of them are feeling included, are feeling safe and ready to learn and are in a good environment. Now, when we locked down, the remote learning highlighted a fact of, well, actually, we can't really be that inclusive practitioners on remote learning. Some of our learners, especially for me, SEND learners, didn't have access, as well as mainstream, didn't have access to, you know, the ICT equipment that they needed. So then if we look at that in terms of inclusion, we're not getting 100% inclusion there, because actually we can't include them on the online Zoom sessions because they don't have access to the equipment. So then what are we doing? Right, we'll give them a paper-based alternative. Well, actually, that's not being 100% inclusive, because, you know, the vast majority of the class are working on a Zoom session, but they are working on the paper-based version via phone. We're still trying to include them, but it's not 100% inclusive, because actually, if we had put things in place and known about this lockdown and pandemic, we would have put things in place in terms of, we would have given those learners the ICT equipment to join in on Zoom. We would have, you know, had a wide range of or differentiated ways of remote learning. So those learners who couldn't access certain ways, you know, the online classes or the blended approach when we went a little bit online, a little bit face to face, you know, we could have worked on that practice to make it more inclusive. For me, especially with working with SEND learners, actually that inclusive practice is a little bit of a grey area, because actually sometimes we're challenging those SEND learners with their needs and with what they feel comfortable doing by trying to get them to be more inclusive. So for some learners, when we were doing remote learning last year, really didn't feel comfortable with Zoom or Teams or video chatting, weren't really comfortable with that. And although it's deemed as inclusive practice and we're including them with their peers and with the staff on that, they really didn't feel comfortable with it, and it brought on a lot of anxieties around, actually, I don't feel comfortable using this technology. I don't really want to do this activity because I don't feel comfortable. So for me, that kind of working with those learners kind of challenged me to think about, well, actually, do we need to be 100% inclusive, or do we need to pick and choose and think about how we make everyone feel included but feel comfortable within what we're doing? And actually, that ended up being one of the better decisions that I made from a practice on remote learning. It was actually, we took the approach of, we didn't exclude learners from online Zoom, but we give them the option of whether they wanted to do online Zoom or they wanted to do, you know, a paper-based approach with phone call. And we kind of had to do it that way. Yes, we would want everyone to be there on the online kind of things, because it was good to see people for the social interaction. But actually, within the inclusive practice, we've got to remember about the learner themselves and actually those needs that the learner have. And actually, is it the case of us trying to be too inclusive can often potentially drive people away and feel excluded? Can we be sometimes too inclusive, which can then result in, you know, our learners feeling like, no, I don't want to be part of this. It's too much pressure. It's too much anxiety. Is there a question for that? So as we're going into the second half of the show, I kind of want to get your thoughts on that. Is there ever a point where inclusive practice becomes exclusive practice, and we, in our attempts to be inclusive practitioners and create a wonderful inclusive environment, is there ever a point where we actually go the other way and we end up excluding learners because of that? I'd be really interested to hear your thoughts. So please do text in, let me know what you're thinking. So that's kind of our focus for the second half of the show, is by being too inclusive, are we excluding some? So that's what we'll discuss in the second half of the show. But for now, we're going to go to the news and to a couple of adverts. See you in the second half.
This is Teach Talk Radio. And this is Teach Talk Radio News. This is your latest Teachers Talk Radio News with Gail Glenn.
In Edinburgh, St Andrew's Fox Covert Roman Catholic Primary School has been awarded the National Learning Outside Classroom Mark Gold status. The mark was awarded by the Council for Learning Outside Classroom. And the National Voice for Teaching Beyond the Classroom, which is known to contribute to raising attainment and improving pupil and staff well-being. Becca Favier, head teacher at St Andrews, said, Being awarded the Gold Mark is a tremendous achievement for all the staff and pupils. That we are the first school in Scotland to achieve this makes it even more special. It shows that we are providing our pupils with potentially life-changing opportunities to learn in meaningful contexts. Dr Anne Hunt, Chief Executive of the Council for Learning Outside the Classroom, said, Learning Outside the Classroom has many proven educational benefits, as well as providing some of the most valuable and memorable experiences in a child's school life.
The results of a pilot scheme revolving around nature has been studied by the City of London Corporation. They found that these activities increased happiness and well-being, helping to balance emotions and energy in children with autism, enabling them to connect with nature. It was also found to prompt them to demonstrate knowledge and improving communication and social interaction with adults and their peers. Enhancing their ability to do tasks independently and increasing their confidence to try new things. Oliver Sales of the City of London Corporation said, Being outdoors has huge benefits to our mental and physical health. And this work shows how it can also benefit the skills development of children, particularly children with autism, providing different learning mechanisms to improve different skill sets. I hope our work will support the development of other similar activities. This has been your daily education news briefing.
Creative resources made for teachers by teachers. At Creative Resources, we've been rethinking what a classroom can be. We've created a huge range of more than 2,500 original and exciting resources that span across more than 50 different subject areas. Whether you're looking for primary or secondary level resources, careers options, PSHE, arts or humanities, Creative Resources have the resources for you. We offer full curriculum packages and unique challenging escape rooms themed on topics such as Shakespeare, Tudors and Fractions. We have quizzes, task cards, Tarsia puzzles and lots more. Better still, more than 100 resources can be accessed for free. Just visit our website, www.creativeresources.com. You can get 10% off any order you make on our website by using the discount code TT Radio. Creative resources made for teachers by teachers. Every teacher loves stationery, right? Imagine getting a selection of fun, beautiful and unique stationery items designed and selected especially for teachers, delivered through your door every month. You need to check out teacherslovestationery.club.
I'm always so excited that the box arrives. It's such a treat. My teacher's Teachers Day Shiny Box is just a little treat time to everyone. It's always full of delightful and surprising items, including some really good quality stationery brands like Fem Castell and Stilo. And because you never know what you're going to get, it makes it even more fun and special when you get it.
It feels really great to be supporting a family business that's run by
school teachers. I can't help feeling like they just know what I'm going to enjoy stationery-wise better than I do myself.
Visit teachersloveStationery.club and enter the code TTRadio when you buy your first stationery box to save £2 today. TeachersloveStationery.club. Introducing the Leadership Masterclass Series by Diana Osagie. Learn how to ditch your fears and develop your leadership confidence. How to deal with difficult colleagues. How to thrive when you lead in a challenging environment. And how to get colleagues to buy into your vision. Join Diana for her online Leadership Masterclasses starting on the 10th of July and running all the way through the summer. These sessions are the perfect way to prepare and refresh for the next academic year and beyond. Book your course at courageousleadership.co.uk/events now. The first 50 leaders to sign up get an additional free mini coaching session with Diana herself. Don't miss this. Courageous Leadership Masterclasses at courageousleadership.co.uk/events. Every teacher loves stationery, right? Imagine getting a selection of fun, beautiful and unique stationery items designed and selected especially for teachers delivered through your door every month. You need to check out teacherslovestationery.club.
I'm always so excited when the box arrives. It's such a treat. My teacher's stationery box is just a little treat to myself every month. It's always full of delightful surprises, including some really cool quality stationery brands like Feather Castell and Stilo, and because you never know what you're going to get, it makes it even more fun and special and unique.
If it feels really great to be sporting around with this, that's right, real teachers, I can't help feeling like they just know what I'm going to enjoy in stationery-wise better than I do myself.
Visit teachersloveStationery.club and enter the code TTRadio when you buy your first stationery box to save £2 today. TeachersloveStationery.club.
And welcome back to the Drive Home Show with myself, Neil Mullen. This week, if you haven't managed to join us in the first half, we are looking at and discussing what inclusive practice looks like to you. And I've been discussing a few things. During the news break and the adverts, we've had one or two comments. So we've had a text in from R.L. Richards, and it says that inclusion is about finding some success for everyone. It takes time and commitment. I would echo those statements. I think good inclusive practice is finding something for everyone. Maybe, you know, success. Yeah, we all want our learners or the people that we work with to be successful. But I think it's finding something for everyone, whether that means that, you know, that learner feels at ease and is ready to learn in that class environment, whether it's the learner just feels safe and enjoys coming into that particular learner environment, or actually just feels included and feels happy to be there. But I like all the point that it does take a lot of time and commitment. It's a lot of time and pressure on school staff. It's a lot of time and pressure on creating that inclusive environment. And just before the news, we kind of posed the question about, you know, in trying to be inclusive and potentially sometimes too inclusive, are we at the risk of exclusion to some? So an example from myself is I've obviously worked in primary, secondary, tertiary, and now community and adult learning. But specifically when I worked in tertiary special education, that was a really fine balance for staff and for learners also. It tends to be that if learners are accessing, you know, a mainstream college, that they will, you know, end up on a on a foundation course or a specific course for SEN learners. Not to say all learners would go on that, because other learners may access, you know, specific subject, specific courses that they're interested in just with a little bit of support. But for those learners who have those needs that need a little bit extra support, they would tend to access that type of course. Now, within that, there is quite a large room for manoeuvre in terms of needs, variety of support needed, and levels of learning. Now, as these kind of courses run, they can become quite large. So the particular establishment I worked at had a cohort of 60 learners. Now, those 60 learners were split into 2 30 classes. So if you can imagine any mainstream teachers out there, two classes of basically 30 learners with an EAT plan, and only, I think it was three staff members between them. So that was difficult in itself, but the particular establishment's philosophy was all about inclusion and inclusive practice. So their philosophy resulted in quite a lot of the staff, you know, doing quite a lot of group work and quite a lot of sessions together. Whereas actually, if we stood back and we thought about it, actually those learners needed to be chunked down even further than the groups that we're working in, because some of the learners didn't really feel included by that. They felt excluded. They felt like they were not being listened to in terms of what they wanted to do and what kind of learning they would like to do. Again, a couple of the other texts in from RL Richards, you know, it is different for each learner. Each learner is going to feel different levels of inclusion. And another message from yourself was funding plays an important part. Now, yeah, funding does play an important part. And that particular establishment was restricted within what they could do. But actually, the way that they kind of ran those things resulted in a few learners feeling quite excluded and quite, you know, felt like their learning wasn't progressing. They weren't actually, their needs weren't being met. So they almost became excluded and weren't showing up for particular sessions and started to not come into course. So actually, by trying to be too inclusive, that particular establishment resulted in a minority, but a small enough minority to result in a few of them feeling excluded and feeling like they weren't, you know, part of that course, or they didn't feel that course was keeping themselves included. But on the other hand, there are other organizations that find that balance between, you know, being inclusive but actually also being selective about that inclusivity. So yes, we're all included, we're all one class, but actually we sometimes need to break down into smaller groups, and we need to actually, you know, take a group away and they go and do a separate activity, or they go and do separate learning for this particular session, because that's going to benefit them and their learning needs. And actually the other group is going to, you know, stay and do this particular activity. Now, to a lay person, that would look like, you know, oh, you're excluding that group over this group. Well, actually, it's not. It's about doing activities or learning or lessons for those specific learners' needs. It's not about being inclusive per se, in terms of, you know, actually, you know, I'm including everyone in the class. No, I'm including everyone by actually selecting what I think is going to be best for those learners to progress and to stretch their learning and to do things. my background is that I teach adults and learners, so I am particularly my kind of curriculum focus is preparation for adulthood. So my inclusive practice can sometimes almost look exclusive at times, because actually within what I'm trying to do with those learners is I need to stretch them and challenge them by making them do more independent things. So sometimes, especially with the COVID pandemic last year, my learners sat on individual desks, and sometimes a learner would just be given a task and allowed to go with it. They're still included within the session, and I would still go over and regularly check. But if someone was to come in, it would just look like I've excluded them and given them a task, and they were just sitting at the desk doing it. But actually, if you were to come and chat to me, it's they're included within the lesson, because they're doing a slightly different activity than the other learners, because it's going to stretch them, it's going to challenge them to promote their independent work, and they're not excluded. They know that I'm going to regularly check in with them. They also know that they can come to me and ask for help, which is also promoting their social and communication skills. So actually, it's probably a very, very, a very fine line. And again, another text in. If learners aren't feeling success, you're 100% right. They're feeling excluded. Now, yeah, that's the fine margins, and that's the challenges that we face as teachers within this whole balance of being an inclusive practitioner. We've got to challenge learners. We've got to stretch them. We've got to help them progress their learning on. But it is a very, very fine line of whether that looks like inclusive practice or whether it looks like or feels like to the learner that they're being excluded. And, you know, R.L. Richards, again, points out it can be a bit of a guessing game. It can be. But I think as you become more experienced as a teacher, you get more in tune with your learners in terms of, you know, are they feeling like they're included within this classroom? Are they feeling like they're included within this course? Are they feeling included within this activity, within this session? Are they actually, you know, do they feel happy? Do they feel like they're making progress? Do they feel like they're being successful? And it still can be a guessing game. But as you get further along with your teaching and the more experience and the more learners that you get to work with, especially for me, the different types of need and the different types of learners with those needs that I get to meet kind of helps me with that. So if that is the case where we're looking at you know, that fine margins between inclusivity and then, you know, if they're not feeling excluded, it's then how do we then try and win those learners back? Or in the beginning, you know, we discussed at the start about learners who have, for whatever reason, felt excluded at an establishment, and then they come to your school or they come to your course or organization. It's then how do we get those learners feeling that they're included? So for me, quite a lot of my learners this academic year have felt excluded from either, you know, a bad college or sixth form experience, you know, feeling excluded from, you know, not completing their school year. You know, one learner was particularly feeling like they were excluded from everything because they hadn't finished their school year and hadn't done all the things that they wanted to do. And so it's about how we win them over. But behind that is actually, and we haven't mentioned this group too much, it's about how we get those parents and carers to feel included and to feel included on their child's journey. I've often found that learners that feel excluded also have parents that feel excluded from from also being part of either the decision making process on what learners are going to access or some of the decisions that are made around their child. In a kind of, for me, especially this year, it was kind of a double hit of, I had to win round some of my learners to feel included on my course and feel, you know, feel and be happy and feel like they could succeed in the classroom and feel included within the classroom, but also working with the parents as well, you know, in a bit of a pastoral type thing, where we had to work on developing those relationships with those parents to feel like they were included and to feel that they were going to, you know, be listened to, feel validated on their points, to feel that actually they were going to, you know, be included with whatever was happening. Now, for me, the parents one was a fairly easy process to try and make them included. That was just having regular chats with the parents over the phone. In non-COVID times, that might have been, you know, getting the parents or carers in to make face-to-face contacts. But yeah, a lot of the parents that I've worked with have often felt that they've not had the support from their school that their child's been to. As SEND learners move from, you know, secondary education up to a tertiary or a mainstream college, parents can often feel that level of support is often markedly different in terms of what they've got at a secondary special school or mainstream school to then a college. And that can result in sometimes them, you know, potentially feeling like they've had a bad experience with that school, or that sometimes parents are just so worn down by having to constantly fight for their child's needs that actually they can sometimes just feel excluded by the whole, you know, SEND, you know, education system, in terms of, you know, they're having to fight for, you know, additional support, or they're having to fight for a place at a certain school. They can often feel excluded from actually just being, feel like they're being supported or feeling like they're being listened to. So yeah, those experiences can often be, you know, a barrier to initially finding and working with the parent or carer. But, you know, working with them pastorally through the phone calls, sometimes we've done a Zoom or a Teams meeting where, you know, we can see each other face to face, obviously because of COVID, has also worked, where, you know, they can, you know, tell their points, or they can exchange what they want to say and feel really included with the staff team. Similarly, with the learners, because we had them face to face for a bit in September, then we went to remote in January, then back to face to face. A lot of our initial work in the first few weeks was, yes, we would access bits of the preparation for adulthood curriculum that we need to access, but a lot of it was working on just making them feel included within the classroom. So that was a lots of activities where we got those opinions from the learners, and we got their voice, and we got how they would want their classroom to feel. So a lot of it was quite self-advocation, which again kind of links back to the parents' experience. And again, RL Richards made a really good point. If parents can often feel excluded because they're constantly having to advocate for the children. So we kind of made that a key focus for our practice of, we're gonna, where appropriate, those learners, we're gonna be advocates for themselves within the classroom. So telling myself as a teacher, but also the learning delivery assistants about, you know, what kind of the best ways to support them, what kind of activities do they feel anxious about, what, you know, are there a learner that wants to just be given some work, an explanation, and then kind of just check-ins, so they just go and do work independently, do they need a little bit more support? So we kind of focused heavily on that in the first few weeks, which allowed those learners to feel almost in charge of their own learning environment. It gave them the advocacy to say, actually, this is what we want our learning environment to look like. This is what we want to, this is what we want it to feel like. This is how I work. This is, you know, these are some of the things that I've never really done before. Could you help me with them? That type of thing. And I think the key is for inclusive practice, whatever level that you're at, you know, whether you're at a top level or you know, middle leadership, teaching, support, and whether you're the learner yourself, parent, carer, external organization, is actually listening to the individual that you're working with at that time. So whether that be the head teacher listening to their staff on what inclusive practice looks like to them, or what the inclusion policy should be within their organization. It should be that teachers and support staff should listen to learners and what they feel is inclusive practice, or what works well for them, or what support they need. That for me, especially with SEND learners, that's been a major buy-in in terms of, for me and my practice, has been looking at what has worked well for them, and almost giving them the blank canvas to say, what does your learning inclusive learning environment look like? You tell us, and then we'll go and create it together in tandem. I have my own ways of being inclusive, but you tell me what you feel like it would look like, and I'll adapt my practice. Sometimes, again, on the other hand, sometimes it can be the other way around, in terms of actually, sometimes it can be, you know, a leader can just set the inclusion policy and that's it. And this is how we're going to do inclusion. Well, that's not really inclusion. That's exclusion to others and their opinions. So again, fine lines on that. Now that inclusion practice and that inclusion, you know, inclusion practice didn't really stop in terms of just our at the start of the year, because of COVID restrictions, we had to have a certain layout of the classroom. Now, layout of the classroom can generally tend itself to an inclusive environment. You can have, you know, there's different ways of setting out a classroom environment, and I'm not going to bore you with that today. But you can lay it out how you would like, and that can create a very easy environment to be inclusive. Obviously, we didn't have that because of the restrictions, so we had to have a very, very formulaic 2 meters apart. You've got your own desk. So then as we go through the year, that kind of stayed the same, and we didn't really have any change that. But our inclusive practice kind of changed because of that. So we had different times of the year we would work with learners, and learners would have their inclusive environment within their physical room, but then they would take that out in the community settings. So when we were able to get out and about, we were able to actually, you know, take that inclusive learning environment and just apply it to a different physical environment. We took the values of what the learners had set up themselves in terms of, you know, we'll all be listened to, we'll all feel this is a safe place to learn and be ourselves. You know, we'll all learn at our own levels and be comfortable with that. We were then able, because that was so strong within the learning environment, when we sent out groups of learners to do different things within the local community, they applied that again to their own to different environments. And that's kind of how they, you know, that wasn't me being the generator of the inclusive environment. That was kind of almost them saying, look, we work with Neil at this particular course, and this is kind of what we value, and this is what we're going to do. So when we've gone to specific organisations or we've gone to specific venues, we've been praised for where the learners have presented themselves and the way that they've carried themselves and interacted with others within the local community. And that's because we've created such a good, inclusive environment that the learners are prepared to work with different people and unfamiliar people that they don't know, and be comfortable in that fact of they feel included enough on their course to try these new things, to try, you know, different points of view and different activities and different challenges. So for a lot of my learners, speaking with unfamiliar people, you know, for example, you know, people at a local job centre, people at you know, the local library, the leisure centre, that's a real difficult skill. It's communicating with unfamiliar people. Now, because of our strong inclusive learning environment, they've had opportunities to practice those things and to practice them in a safe way and have peer feedback on themselves about, yeah, you didn't make eye contact that time with me. You know, if we're out in the community, you might need to make eye contact. You know, a couple of times you forgot what you wanted to say, so this next time when we practice, we can do this. And that's only been able to be done because the learners have kind of almost set the ground rules of what they want to feel, you know, their classroom environment is or what they want it to be. And that's kind of, you know, it is inclusive practice, but it's also it's advocacy for themselves. It's ownership, essentially. And for a lot of SEND learners and for a lot of learners, including myself, I want to feel included, but I also want a little bit of ownership of what I'm doing, whether that be, you know, whether I do my master's course or I'm teaching my learners. I want a bit of ownership on it in terms of, you know, I've got my own voice, I've got my own opinions, I've got my own, you know, needs, and I want to be able to share them, and I want to be able to share them in a comfortable environment where people are going to listen to me. They might not agree with what I've said, but I'm able to share my thoughts. I'm able to share my needs. I'm able to share what support I need. And that was kind of done through the learners. And it's something we're definitely going to take forward in terms of this next academic year. As we enter the next academic year, there's a different factor at play in terms of restrictions have kind of ended. So layout of the classroom can kind of change. Also, as we head into a new academic year, I'm going to get different learners. And, you know, there's a potential there to have different learner needs and a different learner environment. So actually, the inclusive environment that we created with this set of learners is probably not going to be able to be replicated within this new group of learners. So for me, it's inclusive practice and what inclusion looks like is an ever evolving process in terms of it's cyclical. It's 1 year it will look like this, especially for me in terms of my current role. It's going to look like this 1 year, but then the next year it's going to look different. I don't have the same learners from 1 year to the next. It's just a 1 year course that I have them on. So my inclusive practice kind of changes very much according to the learner's need. However, even within a school environment, that can almost change year on year as well, because you would have, you know, mainstream year 11s would obviously leave and you get a new intake of year 7s. There can be changes in leadership in terms of, you know, one leader may be heavily focused on inclusion, another leader may not see it as much of a priority. You will have new staff members come into there. And actually, another point that we briefly touched on at the beginning is that actually the organisation and where it sits within the local community can have an impact on what inclusion looks like. So as I've said, I work in a community building that's in, it's kind of on the outskirts of a town in County Durham. And as it's a community building and it's shared use, we have lots of different organisations coming in and things like that. And within the community building, because there's different people all moving around and buzzing about, it's generally a really inclusive environment. Lots of people are saying hello to others. You know, some of our learners have gone and done little activities with the staff where they've interviewed them. Developing their questioning and answering skills and things like that, and as it's a community building, it prides itself on being inclusive to everyone. Everyone can access it for the different activities that they need to access it for. But where that community building sits within the town, it's kind of almost opened up another strand to what inclusive environments look like, or what inclusion looks like, because we're on the outskirts of the town, and it's kind of within a housing estate, and it's just got a little few shops next to it. It's kind of created a mini inclusive environment around us because of the COVID restrictions, we weren't able to, travel on buses or go and visit town centres and things like that because of restrictions. So we kind of had to use what was around us and the local shops that were there and kind of the local area to do a bit of planning and travel and navigation. And because we've been there for the year and people have been out on walks and people have seen us when we visited local parks, or if they've seen us out and about with staff lanyards on, or even just the learners themselves when they've visited the shop, that's created an additional inclusive bubble for us, because actually when the learners are practicing the skills of going to the shop and budgeting for preparing a meal, they've actually been included in terms of going to the shop. The shopkeeper gets to know them. And by the end of the year, it was kind of they were almost on first name terms and would go in and go, "Oh, are you getting that sandwich today? Oh, are you that's on offer if you're interested today. I know you've bought it a couple of times." So actually that was ideal in terms of my own practice, because I was able to kind of allow the learners to go off and do individual activities, 100% feeling that they were still within that inclusive environment. And RL Richards, you've been fantastic joining in today, and big shout out to you. States the community is learning about inclusion, and the more that we get learners out and about in communities, the better it is that it's going to create inclusive communities around that organization or around that school, college, or whatever. It tends to be that we focus heavily on what inclusion looks like within the classroom or within the school, but actually it needs to be a wider discussion in terms of actually the school, college, community building, wherever you're teaching those learners is kind of a key focus within the community. So actually your inclusive practice is probably going to have a bit of an impact on that wider community. And actually as those learners go further and further, as they go further and further into their adult lives, you know, especially for me as kind of working with adult SEND learners, it's a real focus on their on what they're going to do as they go forward in life. It's then thinking about, right, have they felt included within the school, the college, or sixth form? Have they felt included? Do they know what inclusion is? Do they know how to be inclusive outside of the school? Are they going to then go into an activity, or are they going to then go to a club, an organisation? Are they going to go into employment and be inclusive themselves, having felt included within the school, the college, the sixth form, and within their own local community? Are they going to be able to go and live in a new a town or a city or a village and feel included because they've had access to that inclusive environment? So I'm a little bit conscious of time because, you know, we're nearing the end of the show. So that's kind of my thoughts ultimately summed up in about an hour and a half's work. It's actually, I kind of pose the question, what inclusion looks like. So inclusion looks like, you know, recognizing the individual, giving them something that means that, or that they feel included towards. It also means ingraining and building those inclusive strategies for life. And that starts by listening to the individual, listening to the learner, listening to the parent, listening to colleague, friend, whoever. And it's about listening to their needs, to their wants, to their thoughts, opinions, etc. And that's what inclusion is. It's speaking to the individual. If we get that right, those individuals will feel included and will want to buy into whatever you're doing, whether that be, you know, school, college, a local club, society, a local community. They'll buy into it. From that, then they will go on to be hopefully inclusive themselves, whether that be in their employment, whether that be in their social circles, their local communities. And hopefully they'll pass it on to their children. And I think that's what good inclusion looks like, that we build in the good inclusive practices at the beginning that allows those individuals to have those feelings of being included and to know and understand that actually I need to work with the person that I'm working with to make them feel included. And that's how it keeps going on. And we build that into their lives, and we build that inclusive message as part of our lives. Do we get it right all of the time in this country? No, we don't. Do we get it right around the world? We probably don't. But there is some really, really good inclusive practices out there, and there's some really, really good people who are wonderfully inclusive and can share that and give it to other people so that then they become inclusive. So to sum up, because we're running out of time, what does inclusion look like? It's giving something meaningful to someone, allowing them to voice their opinions and thoughts and needs, and then allowing them to build those inclusive skills themselves that they can take on life and share with other people. And that's kind of what I think good inclusion looks like. Please feel free to tweet me at nmullen1988 with your thoughts on what inclusion looks like, or the Teacher Talk Radio page. I hope you've enjoyed listening this afternoon. Next week, we're kind of a little bit up in the air in terms of what we might be focusing on. In the coming weeks, I do want to focus on what it's like for siblings who have a brother or a sister who has a disability, and also looking at more therapies. But hope you've enjoyed today. Enjoy the rest of your week. I've been Neil Mullen. Thank you for listening.